Hi, I'm Kara Swisher, executive editor of Recode.
And I'm Lauren Good, senior technology editor at The Verge.
And you're listening to Too Embarrassed to Ask, coming to you from the Vox Media Podcast Network. This is a show where we answer all of your embarrassing questions about consumer tech.
It could be anything at all, like which CEOs Kara is going to get fired in 2018.
There's so many. And this is a big, it's going to be a banner year, I think.
I have nothing to say to that.
All right. Well, so send us your questions. Find us on Twitter or tweet them to @Recode or myself or to Lauren with the hashtag TooEmbarrassed.
We also have an email address. It's KaraGetsCEOsFired2018 at Recode.net. No, it's TooEmbarrassed@Recode.net. And a friendly reminder, there are two R's and two S's in embarrassed. You seem very confident about that, by the way.
I do.
I feel like it's going to be a...
It's going to be a banner year.
Yeah.
It's a reckoning for everybody, for sexual harassers, for bad CEOs. It's a reckoning year. For the Republicans, for their behavior, stuff like that.
Well, that's going to be one of the topics we're going to get into in our countdown.
That's
episode.
A good word. That's a good word to return to our lexicon, I think. Reckoning.
The reckoning?
Reckoning.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
2018,
yeah.
Colon. The reckoning.
Right. It sounds like The Purge a little bit.
It sounds like a horror movie.
It does.
Well, that's kind of what 2017
is. True. I'm sure
like.
It was a horror movie, The Reckoning.
Yeah. All right. So today I'm too embarrassed to ask. We're doing something a little differently. Instead of having a guest on the show to talk about a specific consumer product or service, we're looking back on the biggest stories of 2017.
Yes.
And we're going to ask, are those stories really over and what happens next?
Yes, there's so much to talk about. And since we like to talk, we're going to be doing that. We have no guests this week. So,
no guests.
So let's just start. There's so many things to talk about. This has been like a news-filled year on so many. It just seems like every week when if I would get in the shower, I would be worried that something happened while I was.
That you would miss it.
Yes, that I would miss it.
You know, I just took 5 days off of Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
I cheated a couple of days where I just checked it really quickly,
yeah.
but I didn't tweet anything. And
right.
It was really not.
How'd you feel?
I felt great. I felt very
Me too.
Present
I wasn't on
in
it
my
as
life,
much
you know,
as
around the holidays and spending
yep.
time with family and friends. But I also think I wasn't measuring this in any real quantified way, but I also felt like my stress levels went down a little bit because mm-hmm. I wasn't seeing the news constantly.
I would agree.
Or making the news constantly for that matter.
We had a no Trump talk rule during the holidays.
How did
great.
That go?
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah. See?
Fantastic.
Yeah, I was going to say, not many of those issues came up, you know, around the holidays at my place either.
Yeah, it
was,
I'm sure they will,
and they normally do, but in this case, it was just a lot. And everything felt very frenetic.
Well, we will talk about Trump and Twitter and the web position, social media.
That's one of our topics.
But let's start already. Are we jumping straight into Uber?
No.
Which I think is the most important story.
We're going to get there, but we're going to start with the stories that were big, but not the biggest, and then work our way up to the number one top
All
story
right.
of
okay.
the year, which
All right.
you've probably already guessed
yes.
what it is.
And along the way, we're going to be reading some of the messages and tweets you sent us about what you thought were the biggest tech stories of 2017. Lauren asked on Twitter and other social media sites.
Yeah.
And so here we go.
So let's start on a positive note, because honestly, the rest of the podcast is going to be filled with
Negative.
Drama, as I like to say. Lots of drama. There were some, the story number 10 is the big product launches of the year. There were some pretty significant product launches this year. And while we're still not at the point where robots are doing all of our housework and self-driving cars are handling our commutes, we're getting closer to that.
Yes, we are.
Let's go over quickly some of the biggest launches.
Yeah.
iPhone 10?
Yeah.
That's a
I got
big one.
It is. I got to say, I've had some glitchiness with it. I've had some problems. I had to send one back.
Oh, really?
Already, yeah. Because
oh,
of the camera, the face thing froze. And I don't think facial recognition works that much. I'm often putting my number in.
Steve Dowling is calling in three.
I know. I've called Steve Dowling.
Two.
But I have. But, I mean, right. I like it a lot better because it's bigger. My kid got the iPhone 8. I upgraded him because we're on that iPhone upgrade program. And I grabbed them from the kids last night at dinner because I wanted to talk during dinner, and they love to look at their phones. And so I was noticing I hadn't seen them together, and his is enormous. He has the X, the plus.
Mm-hmm.
And I have the X, and I have a bigger screen, and it's a lot smaller. So I was kind of, I hadn't really noticed them next to each other before, which was interesting. So I like the size. I like a lot of parts about it, and I'm getting used to the various things about how you get rid of screens and things like that. You know, it's a learning experience. But I got to say, it hasn't been the easiest transition.
No, I wrote a piece for The Verge a couple weeks ago about the five things that still, basically, that still annoy me about the iPhone 10, which I've been using, I borrowed from Dieter for the past, you know, few weeks. And I think I might go back to the 8.
I was thinking of it, but then I saw the size of it, and I'm like, ugh, that's a big phone.
It is big. For Apple, though, the iPhone 10 was a big thing. It marked 10 years of iPhones. It was
right.
the first OLED display iPhone. It was the first buttonless iPhone.
Yep.
It has Face ID, which is this new era of biometric, you know, scan authentication.
Yeah.
So it was a big phone. It was
well.
A big phone for Apple, and I'd say one of the biggest launches, product launches of the year. Tesla also. We
How
talked about
sell?
Tesla.
How did it sell? How did it sell from The Verge?
The iPhone 10 I don't know off the top of my head.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see those numbers when they come out.
I know that when the iPhone 8 launched, that Tim Cook said, I think it was the fastest selling. You know what? I'm not going to.
I have noticed a lot of people getting the 8 with the 8 and not the 10.
Launch weekend.
A lot of people I know, which I'm surprised, didn't get the 10. They stuck with the 8 and want the 8. And normal people want the 8. They like the button.
I think there's a learning curve for all of these things.
And I think they like the button.
Early adopters that paid for the iPhone 10 and got the iPhone 10 and are really excited about it, they have to be excited about it because they have to justify that they got it.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, yeah, it's totally fine. I'm totally used to these interactions without a button. But for most people, they're still used to the button.
I got to say, I don't love it yet. And interestingly, a lot of people like Nellie was getting the 8, not the 10. It's after watching it's interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah.
Let's talk about Tesla quickly,
yep,
because we had an entire podcast earlier this year with Tamara Warren, our transportation editor, about the Tesla Semi launch. But Tesla Model 3, I don't know if we can officially say the Model 3 launched because it launched to employees.
Yeah.
I went to that event in Fremont,
yes,
at the factory. But they also unveiled a Semi, a giant truck.
Were you deeply in love with Elon Musk during that event? Did you want to throw yourself at the stage?
No, you
him?
Know what happened is... This is not altogether surprising, but there was a press pen, and mm-hmm. then there were, like, where all the
Whoa,
employees
was it like
were.
Trump?
And we were, like, kept in the press pen.
This is, like, Trumpy. Did
so
people throw
just,
things at you?
We weren't, no.
Boo at you?
No.
He could do that. If he said turn around and kill them, they would probably do it.
Kara.
I'm just saying.
This is, we're going to some really dark places.
I'm just
and
saying.
We're just a number
These pens for press.
Number
I don't
10.
Like, I don't like pens for
yeah,
press.
Yeah, it was a press pen.
Wow.
No, I didn't fall in love.
Oh. Did you like his coat, though?
He always wears good coats.
Yeah, you liked his coat. You talked
yeah.
about his coat a lot.
You know, well, I was going to say, I think he wore, I don't remember what jacket he wore to that one, but then at the Semi event, which I was not at, mm-hmm. people were talking about that
oh, the
jacket.
Coat. That was where the coat
He's
went.
Worn velvet jackets
Tamara
before.
Was talking about the coat.
Yeah,
yeah,
right. Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. Anyway, interesting.
I mean, he's a remarkable entrepreneur.
He is.
Amazon and Google, you know, it's funny because I don't think of one product that jumped
yeah.
out at me this year,
no.
but I went to both of their events and they just threw everything at the wall. Like Amazon
yeah.
released 6 hardware products in one single event. Google had everything from mini smart home speakers to AirBuds to this little Clips camera that was supposed to capture.
Yeah.
Plus the Pixel 2, of course,
yeah.
which is their flagship
A lot of
phone.
Advertising enters this holiday season looking at the TV.
For the Pixel?
Tons of, yeah, the Pixel. So much advertising. I saw like 12 or 13 ads. Maybe it's San Francisco or something.
Maybe that's what you should get.
No, I'm not going to get it. But good ads, by the way. Lorraine,
yeah.
very nice job.
All right.
Lorraine.
SpaceX launched a reusable, back to Elon Musk, launched
yep.
a reusable rocket. That
yep.
was a big product launch. Samsung launched
yeah.
a phone that did not explode.
Oh,
it launched
really
2 phones this year.
Lauren, not to explode a phone.
The Note phone that didn't explode. And then there was Snapchat.
Yeah.
We'll get to Snapchat.
Yes, we will get to Snapchat.
Yeah.
Although I'm,
say,
I'm sorry, I'm not going to go slam Snapchat. I think they're still so creative. Again, my kids use them all the time. They're
the
fun
app
to use.
Or the spectacles?
Not the spectacles, obviously. We'll get to that.
That was the
It was, but
it,
I like the try. I like the try. It was interesting and innovative. It wasn't, it was, I like the try.
All right.
I like him. I like him. I got to say, he's full of good ideas. I don't like every part of him, but, you know, I'm just saying.
We're going to get to Snapchat.
Look, Kara being nice
later.
To someone, to
Kara.
A bro entrepreneur. I'm telling you. It's a total enjoyment talking to him, I have to say.
He doesn't
spent
do
all
a lot
time
of
with,
press, right?
I know. Well, this was a little meeting we had. It was lovely. In
when
Venice.
Was this on the
Recently.
Record?
Recently. Oh. Oh, we were just chatting.
Oh.
Yeah. Anyway.
You can tell us all about it here. No
yeah,
one's
I will.
Listening.
Well, it was great. He was great. I just find it totally, there's a couple people I really enjoy talking to, and he's one of them. I like talking to Kevin Systrom. There's a couple entrepreneurs that I really have a great and interesting, I do like talking to Sheryl Sandberg. We mostly argue about various things, but it's an interesting discussion every
mm-hmm.
time. That's
mm-hmm.
what. So, there you go.
All right. We will be getting the Snapchat later on in the show.
Yes, we will.
Very quickly from one of our readers, David Lindsley, who writes in a lot. Thank you for following us this year, David. He says, I think one of the biggest stories was the introduction of mesh Wi-Fi systems, which
yeah.
provide wonderful coverage of the entire house.
I don't
think those are new. They're not new. They've been around for at least a couple of years now. But
now they're working.
We did talk to Eero earlier on this year.
I have an Eero. After our show, I bought a set.
And there's Google's
it works
version
great.
Of it.
After a couple of visits by Eero, it worked great. There's issues with Comcast. I think, of course, that's always the blame. But it was. It was like getting, I mean, and then I had the Comcast people in, and they were like, we should sell this, essentially. Like, I don't, these are great. The Comcast people loved the Eero stuff.
I think in 2018, we should make We should make it a goal to mention Comcast once in
every Well, I'm saying it was an interesting installation.
Not
process.
Always in a favorable way.
Yeah, but I love my ear. I love it. I can also throw people off my network, which I like, and I can know what people are doing and what devices are on, and I can give a guest network. That's what I like. Like,
yeah, the ability to just look and see that you have, you know, 32 devices yes. attached to your network, and by the way,
and figuring out
what
they are,
you don't recognize, and you know yeah. your neighbors are on it. Or
oh, I know my neighbor Bob. You know,
then
Bob, get off my network,
Bob.
I'm going
to
keep him
I want to interview Bob for this podcast and find out what it's like to be Kara Swisher's
neighbor.
You know
what? Great. It's fantastic.
Bob,
we're very good friends. We're having dinner
to
tonight, in fact. I'll see you later.
Do you ever bring that up, though? Do you ever say, like, I see that you're on my
No, I let them do it. I don't care. I allow it.
You just allow it.
I allow it. Uh-huh. But I like the guest network thing, that people can be on my guest network. Mm-hmm. I like the whole thing. I like the whole thing. I'm very pleased with that product after a very bumpy installation process.
Okay.
All right.
Mesh Wi-Fi system, sleeper hit of 2017. Mm-hmm. Story number 9. Want to go for it?
Yes. Amazon eating the world. It's delicious, the world. I'd have like Pepto-Bismol if I was eating the world. Anyway, in Amazon's world, now means organic, fresh, obscure, like emu eggs or exotic juices. Yes, we're talking about Amazon's acquisition of Whole Foods, which was announced in June. This was a huge deal because it not only signaled Amazon was really, really serious about the fresh food business, but also because it was Amazon's biggest acquisition ever, $14
billion. $14 billion.
I know, it's a lot of money for all that overpriced food. In some ways, it was bad news for smaller grocery chains, sort of twee ones especially, and other fresh food startups who've been working on logistics of delivering fresh food to people. But in case you haven't heard, Amazon does logistics pretty well. I actually visited one of Amazon's latest fulfillment centers, and I was blown away by it. It was pretty, at one point I was sort of exhilarated by it and then terrified. Terrified for jobs, terrified for all kinds of things, but I really thought it was so innovative. Another incredibly
innovative
company.
Was this around food?
This was everything. This was everything.
So packaging.
Yeah, they were using the Kiva systems. Yeah, but it was.
Robots.
Yeah, it was really fantastic. Mm-hmm.
Where was this?
In Seattle. I went up with Peter Kafka. Even Peter Kafka was blown away, and he doesn't get blown away by anything.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, it was. I was really. I have.
Did you see any humans working there?
Yes, yes. The packers are astonishing. They're astonishing people, and they're very fast. I just couldn't help thinking that everything could be robotized, made into robots. But you know, they it was a beautiful facility, and there were tons and tons of workers. But it was and bigger than ever. Their argument is that because they have so much demand, they will hire more people. You know, and so on. Then I kept thinking, well, what about the other stores that aren't as good?
Mm-hmm.
It does underscore the point that. Other stores aren't that good. They really aren't. The retail experience is really bad.
No, Amazon
is a tremendous retail experience.
Did you happen to see that they've now virtualized the dash buttons? You know, those physical...
I don't use those.
They're physical plastic things that you'd stick around your house.
I didn't
and then
do that.
They would have a brand attached to it, like Glad garbage bags or...
No, I think those are stupid.
Clorox bleach wipes, whatever it is. And then you would press one, and then you would automatically get a reorder. Now, they just exist virtually on Amazon's website.
That's the correct
website.
Way to do it.
And I use... the crazy Echo Show thing, which mm-hmm. is one of the Echoes, the voice-controlled Echoes, but it has a big screen. I use that in my kitchen.
Yeah,
I use
it
to reorder
those.
Stuff. I wouldn't say all the time, but regularly.
No,
I literally walk up to it and I say, reorder the cat food that I like. And it knows the last time I ordered it, it asks for a PIN code, and then it's done.
Yeah.
It's done. I mean, Amazon has really pioneered all of this frictionless shopping.
It
and
is.
We're now
it's
getting into the next
I've turned
phase
off
of that,
all my
voice.
Echoes in Google Homes. They're off all the time until I turn them on.
Well, that's because you're...
I unplugged them.
You know, you're secretly a tinfoil hat type. Not to be outdone, though, Walmart also made some really interesting e-commerce acquisitions this year. Jason Del Rey from Recode has covered all of these, including Bonobos, ModCloth, Moose Jaw. There are others. But the big, big story was really Amazon Whole Foods this year for Amazon.
Yep. I think Walmart's their biggest competitor in that regard in terms of waking up and understanding. It's going to be hard because even though Doug McMillon, who's the CEO of Walmart, is incredibly smart and has been in that business, in that particular company since he was, like, I think he did produce for them in one of the stores. It's also very hard to compete with Jeff Bezos.
Well, they're also taking very different approaches. I mean, Walmart's, I think the overwhelming majority of Walmart's business is still in-store versus Amazon.
Although it's changing. Online. It's changing pretty drastically.
It's changing, but Walmart's approach is interesting because they're doing all these vertically integrated acquisitions. They're buying very specific brands, very specific niche brands.
It's still the world versus Jeff Bezos, and he's pretty... I'm betting on Bezos in a lot of ways. And his team. That's been a team that's been together. You can't underscore how long that team has been together. Now, that said, Amazon had some real blips this year, especially around sexual harassment with Roy Price and Amazon Studios. And, you know, there's definitely a sense that his... And Jason wrote this great story about the all-male
Yeah, there's one woman on the
executive team, and he had some excuses that were somewhat lame. And I think, you know, the fact that Roy Price had, it took a while to get rid of him, and they didn't get rid of him in the first place after the complaints, underscores the problem with teams that are together too long, for one, which is a good thing sometimes because they're cohesive, and at the same time don't have a viewpoint that maybe this they should have done something about it. And I don't have to say the women have to be the ones to say it in the room, but none of the men did. And so you have to think about cohesion on your team. At the same time, you have to think about diversity of thought, diversity of experience.
And workplace culture in general.
Yes, exactly. I think that was a real fail for Amazon, mm-hmm. and a big fail, a big fail. And, you know, it's been an area that's important to them, so... kind of, he can't do everything, but he should think harder on those things, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They should fix that.
They should fix that.
Okay.
All right. We'll get to that topic, but go ahead.
Story 8.
Yes.
The 8th most important story of the year. Fake news, the president on Twitter.
Yeah.
Can we lump these two together?
Yes, please.
2018 was President Donald Trump's first year of presidency, and fake news, of course, is not a new term at all, but it became an oft-used term over the past several months as he criticized anything in the mainstream media that he basically didn't like. In fact, just the other day, a New York University master's student in journalism just put together this spreadsheet where she, and I believe it was a team of people, tracked every tweet that they categorized as in some way, you know,
true, but he called it fake.
Debasing the media.
Right.
It was actually targeted at the media. And there were nearly 1,000 tweets. I think it was I think they looked at a 2-year period.
Yeah.
990 tweets in which he.
Oh,
in
it's
which
insane.
He
He's now after the FBI, of
the
course.
Mainstream media.
The FBI
right.
is this week. It's a ridiculous abuse of that platform.
Right.
In terms of, it's, you know, I don't know if you know this, but I studied propaganda at journalism school at Columbia, and this is classic. It's classics of repeating a lie so many times that it gets on par with the truth. And it's a technique. He may be doing it not knowing. I think he knows exactly what he's doing, but it was interesting because my kids were been here for the holidays, and I got in a debate with my kid, and he goes, well, he says we have to listen to it. I'm like, no, but you don't. Like, it became, and this kid is not a pro-Trump person, but it was a really interesting thing is that I think most good people tend to try to give people the benefit of the doubt. And I think that's what happens when you repeat a lie enough times, that it becomes that. And so social media, it amplifies it, and then it weaponizes it. And the attacks on the media, it's not being, I got so many care, you're a libtard or whatever the hell their terms are, but it is dangerous to do this.
It's dangerous. I mean, free press is one of the fundamental pillars of a democracy, which, like, I feel like 2017 has been the year of just repeating the obvious, but it is one of the fundamental pillars of a free society, a democracy. And, you know, being able to just read the news that is uncensored, that is,
so we're not Russia. We're not
paid for
Russia.
It. Right. I was going to say not subsidized by the government or some type of, you know, state-run media. We're supposed to be free and open media.
And also,
media.
It's not that the media gets everything right all the time.
No, we make errors. We're human beings. And you may not agree with everything.
It has a point of view, too, which is fine.
Right.
But I think one of the things that's super dangerous is that people are starting to use the techniques. Now, I do think they become tired after a while and nobody believes anything. And I think that's the point, is don't believe anything. And that's a really bad place to be. There's certain fundamental issues that we have to start believing in things, or else it becomes sort of this ridiculous free-for-all. And I think that is really the point. And I think the technique of lying and continuing to lie is some of the main members of the Trump administration just do that. They just lie and lie and lie, and they double down on lying, just like Roy Moore in Alabama. So much great reporting by Alabama media outlets, national media outlets, people there. Lying works, unfortunately, and that's what it's proven. And then lying on social media works even better. Because then you have to have a debate around it, and then it becomes noisy, and then it ends. If you could take one term I would like removed from the lexicon is this fake news, I would take it away completely.
Yeah, because I think in some way the more you say it, the more you normalize it, and people just say it in passing. People say it as a joke
now. Oh, my kids
now,
say it. When I say clean your room, my son goes fake news.
Right, right.
I was like, clean your fucking
and,
room.
Well, and then, you know, another debate sort of emerged, especially in the latter half of the year, about the president's tweets and whether or not Twitter as a platform had any responsibility to basically be not just a platform but a content moderator in some way. And that's one of the big themes that emerged, and we'll also get to a little bit later in the show, this idea of social media companies becoming so big and so influential and so subject, it seems, to foreign interference,
yeah.
That, you know, the idea of, like, whether or not they should be content moderating more has really been a big topic. And so some people believe that President Trump should not be able to tweet some of the things that he has tweeted because it could be considered inciting violence. Some people say that that's not Twitter's role to regulate that.
Yeah, but except they do regulate it in certain people. It's very haphazard is the problem, is that they don't. They either have to not do it at all or do it and do their job. But it's hard because it creates a whole firestorm.
Mm-hmm.
It just does. It, unfortunately, it gives everyone. And what happens is a small group of people are very noisy. It's not most people, but it's a small group of people. And then the media follows it ridiculously. And so the whole thing, I mean, I think one of the things I'd like to create Recode is not doing any more stories on whatever stupid thing Trump tweeted that week. You know what I mean? Unless it's really significant. But even then, like, we have to stop writing stories about the tweets. It's his medium of communication is what it is. And that's why we do it. But not a, we should just talk about the communication, not where it is.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff like that.
That's so interesting.
Yeah. I think about it a lot.
I don't think you're going to be able to stop thinking about it in 2018. I hate to be the bearer of bad news.
No one's going to use the word. I'm not using it. There, I'm done.
All right.
Never using it again.
Good luck getting Kara back, Jack.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm using Twitter. Are you kidding? I'm not using the word fake news.
Oh, I thought you said you weren't using Twitter.
Oh, no, I'm using Twitter. I like to use it. I'm good. I'm quite good at it.
Okay,
too.
Just kidding, Jack. Story seven. The seventh top story of the year.
Go
tech
ahead.
IPOs. Yeah. We don't really cover a lot of financials on this show, but these are worth noting.
Yep.
Snapchat, Blue Apron, Roku, and Stitch Fix.
Not that many, though.
Come not that many
to come, either.
Some have definitely done better than others.
Yeah. So there's some notable IPOs. We have definitely covered them on the Recode site, and so it was the same on The Verge. In the not-so-well category, there was Snap and Blue Apron. Snap went public in March of 2017, trading at $24 a share. Since then, Snap's price has been dropping. It's around $15 now.
Oof.
And its super hype launch of Spectacles seemed to have been a bust. And on Blue Apron, that's been a mess. It dropped the price just before the IPO. It had layoffs after the IPO. There have been key executive departures. And as of early November, we wrote in Recode, it was the worst performing major IPO in the U.S. this year.
Poor Blue Apron.
Yeah.
I still subscribe.
I do. I like Plated better, but anyway.
I've thought about unsubscribing because I think some of their meals have gotten too complicated and rich they take too long to make. I've reduced it. They now have like more, you know, they tried to roll out more options. Now you can just get two meals per week if you want rather than three. Yeah. And you can,
I like the category. I have to say, I've cooked some delicious things on all of them. I mean, it does work for some reason. I'm a good cook on using those services and a bad cook all on my own.
Well, it makes you try things too that you wouldn't normally try.
Spices.
Yeah, spices. Yeah. But yeah, tough year for Blue Apron for sure. And I'm sure once again, Amazon getting deeper into fresh food and potentially fresh food delivery isn't going to be a good thing for Blue Apron. But on the upside, set-top box maker Roku. You know, Roku's been around since 2002.
Yes, I know. I remember
and it finally
it
went public this year. Its stock has consistently gone up since it IPO'd this fall. Now it's at, I think it's at about $54 per share. It's a $5 billion company. Stitch Fix, it's a little too soon to tell how it's going to do long-term since it just went public in November. But as Jason Del Rey wrote for Recode, it was a milestone for female founders in the tech industry.
Yes.
Because it has a female CEO, Katrina Lake. She built a nearly $1 billion revenue business in less than 6 years. And this is kind of an iconic photo. She had her baby with her at the podium when she rang the bell.
Yeah, wasn't that a movie, The Intern, public. With Anne Hathaway? It was about her.
Oh yeah,
It was about a clothes delivery service and a baby. And
About a clothes delivery service?
Yes, it was.
I remember that movie.
It
was with Robert De Niro.
Yes,
and he was her intern.
Was a clothes delivery service.
And but I don't think she had a baby in that one.
She had children. Yes,
she did. I don't remember that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I like
Strang
Stitch
husband,
Fix. I have to say, I haven't used it in a while, but I
like it.
I remember writing about clothing companies like Stitch Fix and Latote and one of those bra companies like several years ago.
I like
ago.
The concept of it. I like it. It's like Amazon. It's very efficient. I find it very efficient. They haven't gotten me yet. I keep getting way too hipster things for Kara Swisher, but they just sent me like t-shirts and like old mom jeans. That'd be great. but they moved into men's. They moved into children's. I don't know if they're already in children's, but the whole conceptual idea of that is I like it. It's very easy and convenient. They do a beautiful job. It's easy to return. I like it. I'm still using it. We'll see if they can get. They've gotten me two or three things that I like. But I like the concept of it very much because I don't like go to stores.
I don't like going to stores either. I find the whole concept of spending time shopping in stores just not appealing.
Yeah.
And as I've gotten older, it's gotten less appealing. And just having it show up in a box
is
really nice.
Sport for me. sport for some people, but I don't never liked it. But I like the concept, and I think if they you could do it with a lot more things. Where if you could return them, they're very easy to return. They're mm-hmm. very, you know, except for Boxmageddon, which I hate. I wish they would come up. All of them would come up with something where you could take the box and return things in the same box, and they give you a bag. And I'm like, why can't I return the box? I understand the price stuff,
yeah,
but I really wish someone, Amazon, Stitch Fix, all these things that plated, Blue Apron, can figure out the box problem. Because I have box.
Yeah, that's one of the biggest complaints people have about
at least
Blue
2 days
Apron,
of my
the
holiday.
Amount of waste it generates.
Yeah. Waste. Yeah. Yeah, that was interesting. But I like the concept. I do like that. I like that there'd be something that would be a locker at my house or something. I don't know. I just think they could do that. I also think, like, there's lots of things where they can have efficiencies that you just see. Mm-hmm. I know why they're doing it for cost.
I think lockers are going to become a thing because of package theft.
Yeah.
Yep. Are gonna be
oh, yeah. I had several packages stolen this year.
I saw a video that went viral.
Porch Pirates.
Now we're really just going off on a tangent, right. But I saw this video that went viral earlier this week with a woman who she had about half a dozen packages stolen off her front porch, so she put kitty litter in the boxes. And then, you know, the people were stealing it. She had caught them on camera, and the people who were stealing it were stealing poop, essentially. Poop.
Well done. Last one for this
section. Kitty litter. Yes, before we take a break.
Yeah, big story.
Story six is...
Russia. How to hijack an election. It's inspired some tweets that we received from our loyal listeners, like this one from Kevin Alam. Definitely the Russian interference in the election and net neutrality. Okay,
yeah,
those are two different things.
Kevin said those were
But Russia,
biggest stories.
Russia was the emerging story this year. Russian agents disseminated inflammatory posts that reached 126 million users on Facebook, published more than 131,000 messages on Twitter, and uploaded over 1,000 videos to Google's YouTube service, according to copies of prepared marks from the companies that were retained by the New York Times, which were given to them, just so you know. Just like, give you a little tip here. But here's the problem. We don't even know if that's the amount. I mean, that's just what they're reporting, and they kept changing that. So it is it's much more massive than that, and in ways we don't understand.
Absolutely.
And we'll never understand.
There are tools that you can use now to go see if you saw posts mm-hmm. that were made by the, I think it's called the Internet Research Agency, which is this shadowy Russian company that's used to influence people online, essentially.
Yep.
You know, I mean, it's really hard to know the fallout from this.
Right.
It's hard to know exactly.
We won't. We never will.
No.
It's like an episode of Homeland or Scandal or something like that. We just will not understand the extent of it. I think the companies, I don't think they're necessarily being disingenuous. I think they don't know. And then they keep tripping over themselves. And it's interesting because I got called from some Facebook people saying I was too mean to them this year. But I don't think they have control over that. I don't think they really can get to the depth of it. And they're trying to ferret it out. I think they do feel awful about it. But they should have had better control of their platforms or understood or something. Somehow anticipated the abuse of these platforms.
Yep. And more recently, we talked about the rollback of net neutrality with the FCC Commissioner Jessica Rosenworcel. And she talked about the fake comments that were being posted during the public comment period of that and how many of them were coming from Russian addresses. Yep. So this was just a few weeks ago, but this was before the net neutrality vote. You can go listen to that podcast if you want to hear more about it. But once again, Russia just keeps coming up.
Yeah.
Inevitably now, it's like when you hear about something being manipulated or something, I don't know, untoward happening online, and you can look to the root of it, and there are often examples of things coming from Russian IP addresses.
You know, they lost everywhere else. They really did lose in terms of creating the military fight that went on with the U.S. and the escalation. They lost, you know, I visited there several times to Russia. And, you know, you do see sort of this society that was worn out from the Cold War and everything. And they have found a way to infiltrate our country in a way that's really effective. You know, they always were very good in this area. And it's something that maybe our country's doing there, but or elsewhere in the world. But the fact of the matter is they found a really great way. Our country is hopped up on the internet, and it's a way to manipulate people's opinions. And it's right down their wheelhouse, right in their wheelhouse in terms of doing that propaganda and the uses of propaganda tools. And so I think and that's not just Russia, other countries too, in terms of hacking. I think that's one of the things that we're going to see. We've got to think really hard about the manipulation of all our technology here, because we're becoming so reliant on it that it's something that's a real weak point for this country in a way that I don't think other things are.
Mm-hmm.
That and trans fat. but we're exporting that to the world. There were some great stories.
North Korea and gluten.
Yeah,
gluten's biggest.
No, but there was a great story
Coast.
In the New York Times about India eating fast food. They're trying to do something about it. We've exported fast food.
Right, there was a father who was lobbying against.
We may win by getting everyone fat and having heart attacks. But it's interesting. Then the irony is that, you know, The U.S. did not invent the internet. I know I've said this and people have—we have. Like, a lot of the leading companies have come from the U.S. that are running the show, essentially. And the fact that it's been turned around on this country is really fascinating. Mm-hmm. It's a really interesting thing.
Yeah, it really is.
You know. Anyway, when we get back, we have five more of the tech stories to break. And we're going to continue down to our number one. It's like Casey Kasem. Remember that?
Going down to number one.
The number one hit is. And then they. Anyway.
Ace of Base.
Anyway, we have lots of them to discuss. But we're going to take a quick break now to hear a word from our sponsor, Lauren.
Well, my New Year's resolution has come up with something new to say instead of ka-ching. But yeah. We're not quite there yet. So ka-ching.
How about pa-chow?
Pa-chow?
I don't know. We'll think of something.
We'll think of something.
We'll be back. Today's show is brought to you by Simple Human. Their goal is to improve the way people go about day-to-day tasks, one innovative product at a time. They sent me their latest product to try, and it's really cool, and I like it a little too much. It's a touch-free motion sensor trash can that you can also control with your voice. I am driving everyone at my house crazy talking to the trash can. If you've got a mess of stuff you need to throw away fast or just want to toss a paper towel from far away, the Simple Human Sensor can is for you. The can is tested to last more than 150,000 cycles. That's equal to 20 times a day. I do it like 50 times a day for over 20 years. In other words, bring on the trash. You can use your own trash bags or you can use the custom fit liners from Simple Human. They're stronger, neater, and they fit perfectly. So if you're anal retentive like I am, you'll enjoy them. You won't realize how much you'll enjoy using one of these until you have it. And I have to say, I really am enjoying it more than I thought I would. They're available in a single bin or with two compartments for recycling. And Simple Human Sensor comes in five beautiful different finishes: brushed rose gold, white, black, stainless, and dark bronze. Visit simplehuman.com to purchase your sensor can with voice. Enter the promo code ASK at checkout to receive 15% off any of the sensor cans with voice. Again, use the promo code ASK at simplehuman.com for a discount on your own voice-controlled sensor can. And we're back talking about the most important tech stories of 2017.
One of our listeners, Bridget McGraw, wrote in and said we should put Kara Swisher running for mayor of San Francisco on that list.
Yeah, I can neither confirm nor deny. Actually, tragically, the mayor of San Francisco died recently.
Rest
and
in peace,
so there's, things are being moved forward rather quickly, and I do not have the time to do this.
So you're not running for mayor
not for this
as an
round.
Interim mayor.
I cannot. There's a lot of
There is an interim mayor now, and then they would have to have some type of special election.
Yes, right? There's all kinds of complexity, and I have other things I'm doing in 2018, so I can't really focus on that. But I think, you know, I think about it a lot. I walk around the city all the time, and I was just doing it today. I walk rather than drive and things like that, and we've got so many intractable problems. We were just talking about the it sounds stupid, but the trash is so indicative of sort of what's happened to San Francisco in terms of as you were saying, coming here, the encampments of the homeless have become out of control. It's tragic for the people living
on
the streets. It's tragic for people living in the city. You know, I mean, it's tragic for the entire community. The fighting over development is still continues to be, and in this city, which is so wealthy, to see this happening. And it's not just being a bleeding heart about it, because some of the solutions are not good. People should not be living on the street in tents. I get the problem, but there's got to be better solutions.
There should be housing for them.
There should be housing. Yep. There should be better solutions.
The economy grew dramatically, especially in the tech sector during the time that Ed Lee was mayor. And I think in general, he was a very, very beloved and well-liked mayor. He's responsible for bringing some of the big tech companies into parts of San Francisco they might not have considered otherwise through tax breaks. He brought in a lot of jobs were created during the time that he was mayor. But as a result, there's also been this pushback against building, and especially building affordable housing. And so as a result, we have just too many people here. It's an unsustainable problem.
And it's a very partisan situation. Here you have the left and the middle, essentially. There's no right wing here in San Francisco. But it doesn't do anybody any good. You know, I was watching a kid go by a homeless encampment where two people were shooting up. And it's like, this is not. No. For this kid, it's bad. For the people on the streets, it's bad. And we have to really start to be honest with ourselves on what we're creating and the kind of messages we're putting out to our kids and everything else. And so I think, you know, just the trash alone is really, and I sound like a crazy anti-litter bug person, but it says something about the civic city when there's no part of San Francisco that's not filthy, like just filthy. And so.
You're not availing yourself to us in 2018 as mayor.
I cannot. So. I don't know what I would do. I would like make everyone pick up or find them. I think about it when I walk. I'm like, what would you do? Like, like, what would be the solution?
Right, but what's the solution?
It's an extraordinarily complex problem that needs really hard thinking. And it's the way to start, like, deal with the homeless and drug problem and then move through our education issues, policing, all kinds of things.
And housing.
Housing.
You read these stories sometimes. I mean, the New York Times has covered this quite well. But you do read stories about these crazy commutes that people have now. And it's somewhat anecdotal. But some of the city's workers, people who are vital to the city, you know, running every day, that does teachers and authorities, and they're commuting from like 2 hours away
on these buses and stuff
just,
like that.
It's crazy.
And you know what's interesting is that it may not, it's not just a San Francisco problem, it's going to be a problem for all cities. And we'll see in some of these tech stories about self-driving cars and things like that, we'll have a really interesting impact. I think one of the things I was thinking about, and I debated this again with my kids, is what if you made the entire center of San Francisco car free? Like, what if you just declared it? I mean, it'd be interesting. Like, that's what a mayor's got. That's what a kind of mayor has to do going forward, is like pick something where you just say, this is what we're going to do. This is our goal. And anyway, just an interesting concept. Anyway, let's get to the stories.
So when could you run for mayor? Would it be 2020?
I'm not sure. I'm going to live a long time, Lauren.
All right.
All right. Next.
Story number 5. We touched on this a little bit earlier, but net neutrality.
Yeah.
This was a huge story just a couple weeks ago, and a lot bigger than most people probably realize, because unfortunately the phrase net neutrality just has a way of putting everybody
right now
to sleep. What an unfortunate phrase, right? But basically, the new chairman of the FCC had set forth a proposal to roll back net neutrality laws that were established in 2015. And these were laws that basically regulated the internet like it was a telecommunications service and not an information service. Basically, it's said, the internet is a utility. It's not something that can be manipulated through business interests. You can't have your ISP prioritizing or throttling content just because they feel like it. It's a protected utility in our country. This is Ajit Pai. He set forth a proposal to roll this these laws. And then after a vote, it was repealed, unfortunately, 3-2.
Yeah, it's a very complicated issue, and it's fundamental for this country for an open, free internet, and a lot of people, except the internet service providers, think net neutrality is a good thing. But it is more complicated than that. Mm-hmm. It was really, I was with a Comcast executive, and she was like, she goes, right now we aren't terrible. Right now, if you felt like it, you could stream The Crown. I was like, yes, but it was just, they were using it. It was very funny, but it's no longer in place. But there will be lawsuits. So this is going to go on and on. And I think it gets to the heart of the idea of who owns the internet and who should provide it. Is it a business, or is it a utility, or is it or should it be free? I mean, it's a very obviously lucrative for a lot of companies. And companies have been built on the backs of these networks. Netflix wouldn't exist without Comcast, if you think about, for example, here. But it's a complicated issue. And the question is it something that should, it's going to go on. Let's just say it's not going to stop with this. And
this
it will change
many,
with
many
each
months.
Administration. And so we have to really think hard about what these, as they develop even further, what should be free and what should not be free, and what should be paid by the government, what should not be paid. And it's going to be an intractable issue for years to come.
I mean, I think in the short term, people have probably looked at things like these zero rating schemes and said, "Well, that's not so terrible if I have T-Mobile and I'm able to stream my Netflix for free or whatever it is without going against my data cap. That doesn't sound so terrible." And I think a lot of the ISPs, at least in the short term, have committed to saying nothing's going to change. In fact, Jake Castronakis from the Verge team went and asked 10 ISPs what their stance is now that the law has been repealed on net neutrality, and they all said nothing's going to change. But a lot of the language was present tense. A lot of it wasn't, nothing will change in the future, or we will never do X or whatever it is. And so I think it potentially could be a slippery slope into an internet that is just a different experience from what we've had.
Yep. It'll go on forever, and we're going to come up with a new name this year.
Yeah, what should we call it?
I don't know. I can't even think of one. I can't even.
Free open internet.
It's like a lot of words that are so loaded. They're all so loaded, and this one's loaded in the way to make you bored. Yeah. Story 4, Bitcoin. I was just opening up Coinbase to look at the price of Bitcoin.
Do you own Bitcoin?
I do. I've lost it. I own 10 Bitcoin, I think, somewhere. I'm very wealthy in Bitcoin, apparently. I bought some many, many years ago, back in the day when it was like $500. And it got up to $19,000, which was a high. It looks to
I think it was nearly $20,000.
$19,000, 2005. It was 2005 to $19,000.
On the Friday before Christmas, it was low.
Yes,
it was,
yes.
$12,000.
Yeah, it went low, and now it's, let me look. Let me do 1 week.
So then people were saying, oh,
wow,
the bubble is burst.
Let's do 1 month. Yeah. So it went up to 19,810 was the high, it looks like. And then it's been down. Now it's at Bitcoin price is 15,200. So that went down quite a bit, but it's up, still up $5,600.
I'm surprised you're allowed to own Bitcoin.
I bought it a long time ago. I don't own it. This was like, literally, it was like in 19, let's see, all. When was it around? It was back in, oh, I don't know when this is. This is like 2002. Whenever it started, I did a story on it. And in order to do it, I had to buy it. And it was cheap. And so I did. And then I don't know where it is. Like, that's the thing. I have it somewhere. And that's the problem with Bitcoin. I know where my money and my, if I had gold, I'd know where I put it. Or maybe I wouldn't. But it's like gold. Actually, it's a very similar kind of situation. And so I've lost it. I've lost my Bitcoin. It may have been stolen from me. I just put it. I just tried it. And it was so inexpensive at the time. I didn't think about it. I think I bought two or three or five. I can't. Could be 10.
You're talking about the difference of tens of thousands.
I know,
dollars.
But it doesn't matter. It does not worth anything to me because I bought it for like, I think it was, I expensed it at the time. It was $400 or some, it's some, in, whenever it started, I had a meeting with Wences Casares who runs Zappo. And he said, you should try it. And I don't know if I put it on Bitcoin or Zappo. I can't. I've opened up, figured out my accounts, and it's not in Coinbase. I just don't know.
I've never bought a Bitcoin. I would have as an experiment a while ago, but then it got really expensive. And then we basically established that editorially that we shouldn't own it because we're writing about it.
Well, essentially, I don't own it anymore at all because I can't find it. It could be on a little thing. I'm just saying. Yeah. When I find it, I'm going to throw a big old party.
Paying for college education.
I could. I think I own it.
Well, at least, I don't know. It depends on where he goes to school, but at least a year maybe.
Yeah, I could pay for 1 year.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But so do you think this is, so by the way, we did get some tweets when I asked people, what do you think the biggest story of the year was? Grady Locklear wrote and said, Bitcoin, hashtag cryptomania. Trey ditto, Bitcoin is not a bubble. People don't understand what a bubble means. Bitcoin, not even mainstream. Bubble is when last people get in, like, real estate.
Yeah.
Do you think this is a bubble?
Here's the problem. I think people, there was one very smart tweet about it, is that when the internet felt like a bubble at the time it started, but people were using it. Like, most people don't use, there's all these stories about people buying a pizza with a Bitcoin and now it's a 15,000, whatever. Those are such typical media stories, idiotic media stories. I think the question is, I don't know if it's going to be Bitcoin, and it's not used widely. And so that's, I always wonder, it feels like gold, like owning gold, like that kind of thing. So in that way, why is gold worth what it's worth?
Well, do you think it's different? Gold is a physical,
yes,
tangible
thing. Yes, but it's just
a thing.
But it's why is that? But why that?
Like, I don't know.
Why
I mean,
not,
I think
like
the
water?
Appeal, I think like, the appeal of Bitcoin is exactly what it's described as, because it's decentralized, it's unregulated, it's deflationary, it's not... It's
I get why if you're in a country where that's a problem. It's just a question, how much will governments really let this go? Like, that's because there is some control over it by governments, but it isn't. It's uncontrolled. Secondly, what's the use of it? If it's, to me, it reminds me of gold. That's all it does. It's a thing that's just decided to be worth it, and therefore it is. Like, if you think about gold, there's no reason why it's gold over silver, because there's less of it, I guess. It's harder to get, or oil or anything else. It feels like a commodity to me. The second thing is, there is going to be a change in how we use currency. Because if you think about currency, it's so crazy. Currency is just, like, why is that paper dollar in your wallet worth something? It's just a paper. It's just, it's crazy. You carry it around. It's heavy. A lot of them, people steal them. It's the way we think about how we buy things has to fundamentally change in terms of
wealth. But I see what you're saying in not attaching or not seeing the reason to attach such a value to a physical good, or at least place the importance on the fact that it is a physical good. But the fact that it's a physical thing also means it's limited quantity. Whereas an entirely digital currency, also I think there are 21 million Bitcoin out there, right? So there's like this fake ceiling on it.
But it
like,
isn't that fake.
Could
it's what everybody believes.
But it could change all the time.
I think there's got to be a change in how we buy and sell things and what currency we use. I mean, whether it's dollars or Bitcoins or whatever. I think we are not going to have currency in the future and coins, just real coins. First of all, they're going to be gone in 50, whatever. We're just not going to have them. It doesn't make any sense. None of it makes any sense except that we all believe in it, right? If you really take it apart. And so I think the question is, how do we buy things? What's worth things? Like right now, you have blank amount of money in your bank account. You ever really seen that money? It's not like Gringotts and Harry Potter and there's a safe and your little jewels are in there. It represents something, but you've never seen your money.
Yeah, they're digital numbers.
It's digital numbers. You don't know that it's there. Like, it's just, you just have decided to believe in it, but it's not, we've all just agreed that it's there. And so I think that's the question is, when does it become useful? When does an Amazon get into it? When do retailers accept it? When is it used for things? It's just that it's not controlled by the government. And that's what a lot of libertarians like. That's what obviously drug dealers and others. But I think in general, people like it because it's not controlled by the government and therefore is not necessarily subject to political manipulation.
So do you agree with one of our commenters that it can't be a bubble because it's not mainstream, that something has to be mainstream in order to have created a bubble effectively?
Yes, I do agree with that. I think you will have a different kind of currency. I think it'll probably be the dollar for a long time. The dollar is de facto the global currency right now, really. So the question is, how do we do that? Like, everything's going to be digital. There will be a currency system, and it makes sense that it would be away from the government because governments have spent their lives manipulating currency against each other in political ways. And so it's going to be, to me, if I were in one area of finance, I would be looking at cryptocurrency. Like, how is that going to happen? And currency is crypto now. All currencies
right,
are.
Right, it is.
And so it's an area I don't know a lot about. It's like healthcare. I sense that this is a really big area.
Does it alarm you at all that we're not entirely sure where it came from?
No.
And there are conspiracy theories out there that I've heard people say to me, like, well, what if North Korea created Bitcoin and we're essentially millions of people are solving all of these, hashes and. Huh.
And then they're going to crash it at some point when everyone's on it.
Right.
I don't know about that.
No.
Okay.
Like I said, conspiracy theory.
I think things are a lot more chaotic than organized. That's all, except for the Russians. No. But I think, I think it's a great story. It's a great story and it'll be interesting. I think getting away from the numbers going up and down is kind of, that's the press story, but I think it's much more interesting and profound. Sort of like Google Glass. Everyone's like, oh, it's a failure. I'm like, no, but it isn't. Like, the concept.
Well, now everybody's making AR glasses.
Right, exactly. The concept was, right when it failed, I'm like,
Magic Leap and.
Of course we're going to have something like this.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, third story. Let's get to
third story.
Three more to go. On our countdown, we're getting to number one, which guess what?
Casey Kasem.
This it rhymes is, with Noober.
This is really it rhymes with Goober.
I was going to say another word, but the Travis.
Story
likes.
Number three is really less of a story, more of a theme. Yeah. The big tech backlash. Yeah. This tweet from Liz Nasty Weeks about sums it up. She points out a few topics: sexual harassment, Whole Foods acquisition, which we covered. Tech funding newspapers, which is a good one. Algorithms, the shift from being, this is a good one. Algorithms and the shifts from quote unquote being platforms to quote unquote, are you fucking kidding me, Silicon Valley? And that last part is what we're focused on for number three, the big tech backlash. Can I just say that I'd like to posit that this all kicked off with Juicero.
It did not. I say it kicked off with Kara Swisher, who was writing about this back in January and yelling at Dan Rose at the Facebook at the DLD conference. The concept. Well, we can start with Juicero, but it's the same.
Juicero is this $700 Wi-Fi juicing machine. We had Doug Evans, the then CEO, on the show. He talked about it. At one point, Kara did say to him something like, what if I just squeeze the packet with my hands or something like that. You said it like totally just offhandedly.
Right.
We weren't really focused. And then we moved on from it. And we kept asking, well, why do you need this $700 machine? And what's the draw of this? And they had this whole plan for getting the juicer in grocery stores and having people make juice that way. They're selling the packets. I think that, listen, was Doug Evans the first CEO who was capitalizing on the health and wellness industry, and espousing a certain lifestyle. And for
him, he really meant it.
He had experience in the juicing business before this.
He had a very successful juicing.
He had what was it called? The chain in New York City that
Juice
ended up,
City. I don't know. Yeah. Something like that.
So Organic Planet. No, I don't know. You guys can look it up. But ultimately the company first slashed its price to $400 because no one was buying the darn thing. And then all of a sudden, I think it was the Bloomberg reporters who discovered that you could just take these packets and use your hands and squeeze the juice out of the packets. And you didn't actually need the industrial grade.
You didn't. I actually asked that question for a reason because a very well-known internet person showed me a video of them doing it. earlier. It was someone. I'm not going to say who it was, but
oh, so someone had discovered this.
Someone had made a video and sent it around
and said you could just use your hands
and then did it on a video. So that's why I asked that question.
Oh, this is
good story for Bloomberg.
This is somewhat tongue in cheek when you compare it to some of the much much bigger tech stories that have emerged this year. But there was this backlash to something like this. Like people
were
saying,
because people like to be mad at juicing things. Who cares about
what is wrong with Silicon Valley, right?
Right.
And I think that.
Yeah, but there's been a million of those. There's been a million.
Perhaps. Remember Vessel, the smart cup from a few years ago?
Yeah, there's been like a zillion. Peach, which we talked about. You know, Silicon Valley has not, the cat, QCat. I mean, Silicon Valley always had a dumb company. Has always had a dumb, overpriced company that maybe points the way to the future, but at the same time is just silly.
Yeah, Bodega. Bodega was another thing that happened this year that really had a lot of backlash.
Yeah.
And then it really did. You know, the backlash started to happen with some of the bigger companies bigger platforms.
It was a very different thing.
About.
What was happening
these are
here,
very different.
And again, I'm going to be lecturing, because I literally was writing about this at the beginning of 2017. In December, I was writing about when they went to see President Trump without saying anything significant about immigration or things
and
like that.
And this was Bezos and Elon and
they
Cheryl.
All went.
And,
and I had big arguments with all of them on this issue, is that they went to see Trump and did not bring up immigration, they did not bring up publicly. They have all this power and they didn't. So I wrote a series of columns sort of calling them sheeple and things like that. And it wasn't so much to be anti-Trump as to be that these people are in positions of enormous power and they abrogate their responsibility. They pretend their platforms, which are astonishingly powerful, are benign. They are not benign. They can be used for ill. That it was obviously used in the election. We interviewed Hillary Clinton at the Code Conference about this. Now, you can have your opinions on Hillary Clinton, but she's dead right about the manipulation of the election, no matter what you think. And whether it had a huge impact or not, look, she definitely acknowledged she was a bad candidate. At the same time, why should there be any kind of manipulation whatsoever? Like, that's the real question. Instead of let's not focus on Hillary Clinton, let's focus on the manipulation. And so I think these companies really have not taken the responsibility that they need to have. They've become billionaires, but there's been manipulation of users, the fact that people increasingly feel like they need to disconnect from technology, the addictive qualities of it, the vague and sometimes not so vague feeling. These companies are gathering your data for bad reasons. They are benefiting from you. And in violating your privacy, and we have to think really hard about these issues terms of using it. And by the way, pretending that like it's libertarian, anyone can do what they want, these are addictive platforms. And there's been so many studies about video games, about Twitter, about everything else. I feel it. I know I've never been addicted to a thing in my life, cigarettes or drinking or anything like that. I know I'm addicted to social media or Twitter at least. Mm-hmm. And I know they're doing things to make me that way.
No, they're designed. A lot of the applications that we use are actually, I just made a video on this, are designed to offer us intermittent rewards. We know that there are going to be these rewards that come, but we don't know when. And that's how a lot of apps are designed. And so you keep checking and checking and checking. You keep logging in because you don't know when you're going to get that like or that email or that notification or whatever it is.
Right.
It is a problem. Like, I think we're like... We started off joking about Juicero, and Juicero is like one of these ideas.
Nobody was addicted to
Juicero. There was a super hyped product that had that it got a lot of venture capital funding and ended up going bust. And that's like a sort of a classic Silicon Valley story in some ways. And then there is this interference or influence of the most important platforms that we use. And then there is this idea of how can we as humans disassociate from technology when we need to. And I think that there are a lot of people who are going to continue to use Facebook and Twitter and Google products and whatever else. And they're honestly not going to think twice about what they're doing because they just aren't thinking about it. And it's convenient to them. And it's a free service. And they're okay with giving up their data in exchange for a free service. But I personally feel that 2017 and into 2018 are the years, became the years, when it's really going to be impossible for people to disassociate the products we use from the companies and the people from which they sprung.
And again, the addictiveness plays into what Russia did. Like, it's all part, like, it's so easily manipulable because we're addicted to it. And because our privacy is being violated, we can be even more manipulated. And so it just creates this... And again, I'm not one of these, but it reminds, it's not cigarettes, but it's right down that lane. It's right, you know, I think most people... Every single person I know does not feel good after using social media. And I know that I can't put my phone down. I know there's something going on, and I'm very aware of it. And I think everyone is. And if they do like to push this libertarian idea, is if you didn't want to use it, you wouldn't use it. But why do they have so many engineers working on making you push that button? Why do they have so many people it is like gambling. It's like a slot machine. It is. There's something in the human brain, a dopamine rush. There's all kind. There should be studies of this to understand it, and then figure out how to maybe like I call on like Apple and Google to think about this home screen. Why not put just the useful apps visible and the others in files? There's other, you know, there's ways to assuage this. And like Uber, I don't check Uber all the time. I just use it. It's a utility. I use an Uber or a Lyft and then I turn it off. Like that's perfect in a lot of ways. It's useful and at the same time, whatever you think of those car driving programs. But like there's certain things, or you check the weather. Like you just check it. You don't obsessively check it. And so what things should be on the home screen? I think Google and Apple should be at the forefront of thinking about and talking about these issues. But they, first of all, Facebook doesn't want to because their business is predicated on constant use.
Right.
So, yep. I mean, that's the problem.
More and more of
but
your data.
Apple certainly isn't. So why couldn't Apple lead the way?
No, Apple, the relationship there is still fairly straightforward relative to other companies. You pay a premium for a product and you have the reasonable expectation that then you're going to get like an ad-free experience, no crummy malware, and that they're not going to sell your data, you know, to advertisers and yeah. whoever else. Hopefully not the Russians either. So, yeah, like that kind of straightforward experience with tech products these days is rare because in yeah. most cases you are giving something up about yourself, whether to Amazon or whether to Google or whoever
or
it
whatever,
is.
Whatever.
Facebook.
And the same thing. I mean, I think a lot of early Facebook people are talking out about it. Not, you know, not just Sean Parker
yeah.
and others.
I was going to say Chamath Palihapitiya said something
and then he took
about
it back.
It,
but you know what? He said it on our podcast a year ago. He was in the, down the right lane. What happens is he gets a call like, hey, cut it out kind of stuff. And so... sorry, Chamath, but you did. You said it several hundred times on our podcast. And so I think a lot of early people are speaking out, not just Chamath, but lots of people like, what have we done? And so you have to think hard about how we can. Not that these services aren't great on lots of ways. It's a great communications. It's great to share things. Twitter can be super fun. Like some of the fun memes are great. Like, I don't know if you saw Beyonce's family dancing or like there's a million of them, like the dad rearranging the living room. They're nice.
Yeah.
They're great little stories. It's like just regular memes. Media that is addictive too, it can make you feel sick and bad and, you know, FOMA, all kinds of things that aren't, and it doesn't play into humanity's worst characteristics, I think.
Yep. I spoke to a doctor recently, Larry Rosen, who said it might be good for their business models, but it might not be good for our humanware.
Right. And humans always degenerate.
Humanware. I like that term. Everyone look out
degenerate.
For their own humanware in 2018.
Yeah, I literally, again, with my kids, I can see it. I can see it. You have to, like, grab it out of their hands and, like, throw it against the wall, which I did several times this holiday season. Anyway, second story.
Story number two.
And they're linked. Two and one are linked.
They are linked.
Yeah.
Story number two is hashtag Me Too. Not just in tech, but everywhere. 2017 was really the year that the lid was blown open on all kinds of harassment issues, not just tech, but media across other industries too. We had Ninian Wang and Joelle Emerson on our podcast earlier this year. Joelle runs a firm called Paradigm that looks to, you know, address biases in the
right.
workplace. You know, right at the get-go. Ninian Wang, of course, was one of the entrepreneurs who spoke out against a VC named Justin Caldebeck, who, along with other women, she spoke out, who was harassed by him. He ended up getting fired. Other people, not to just do a laundry list here, but Dave McClure, another well-known VC, stepped down from his role. Robert Scoble, the CEO of SoFi. Roy Price at Amazon Studios, you mentioned earlier. And of course, not just in tech. There's the Harvey Weinstein story. There was the Matt Lauer story. There's the Bill O'Reilly story.
Which is every day.
There's so much going on
Vice
right
News.
Now.
Vice.
And Vice News was one of the most recent stories that came out. And of course, one of our own,
and that's, by the
one
way,
of our own executives at Vox Media,
there.
Lox Steele, also was fired as a result of misconduct. So this is, I mean, this is the big theme of 2017.
Absolutely.
And there's a good reason why Time Magazine made all of these women who spoke out the face of the Time Person of the Year, which was well deserved. And I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing, but it's only going to get worse in 2018.
100%. I mean, it's not only going to get worse. It's that these are stories. Now, here's a place where social media is great. Like, here we are, the stories. You cannot push back the tide of these people's stories. And I know people are like, oh, people are using it too much. No, this is exactly what's great about social media is that people are, it happened in the, what was that mom's group on, not mom's group, I'm sorry, there was a group on Facebook that was about people telling stories. I think what's great about the human race is telling stories. And I think this is exactly what's had to happen, is that people, you know, even if there's abuses of it, I think it's fantastic that people begin to understand they're not alone, that there are, that there is strength in numbers. There's several friends of mine who've been sexually harassed, finally talking about it, finally doing something about it, finally calling and contacting HR people. For years, I've been bugging a lot of people. I think I bugged you once when you got bothered at a thing. And you're like, I remember you saying, and you were not just the only one, oh, it's no big deal. And I was like, oh, it's a big deal. Like, it's, and it, what was interesting is the courage to talk is born by people talking, and people feeling safe in groups and feeling safe to tell their stories. And so I think social media is great for this. I think it's, I think there'll be many more stories because people are tired of this behavior. It's a, someone just the other day was calling it a tax on women, a tax on people of color. It's a tax. Why do they have to have this happen to them?
Why do they have to? It's the victim's burden too.
Right.
Because it happens to you. And then you not only, you have to figure out, to strategize around how to, if you're going to tell your story, how to tell your story. You deal with the emotional burden of the aftermath of all of that,
and the
price of
you do.
Price of your career. It's a really crummy thing.
Right, exactly. And it's also good to hear points of view that you may not like Matt Damon talking about it. I mean, he has a very, the reason I thought that was interesting is he's very typical. It's like, you should thank the people who don't harass you. I'm like, that's, and that got debated, which was great. Like, most people thought he was an idiot, which he was, but he definitely has a point of view that a lot of people think. Like, all, think of all the nice people. I'm like, let's not think about all the nice people. Let's think about the people who aren't so nice.
Right.
And so I
some people also make the partisan argument. Like, they align themselves with one, you know, political party, and so they're more likely to say something about someone they know as a Dem versus a,
yeah,
you know, Fox News anchor or vice
right.
versa. And
yeah.
It's so wrong to make it a partisan issue because it happens to everybody.
Right, absolutely. And you look, just happened with Corey Lewandowski group slapping. You know he did that. You know, he just doesn't feel bad about it. Now maybe, I don't think he'll ever feel bad about it, but the fact that a Trump supporter is the one that complained about it, or in the Roy Moore thing. And so I think what happens is that people feel, people telling their stories is the critical part of it. And I think eventually, you know, there's truth and then there's reconciliation. And you shouldn't necessarily have to get to reconciliation that quickly. I think women and people of color are always told, well, yeah, it's been a problem, but let's move on. Like, that's their favorite. That's the favorite thing. Like, let's move on. Let's not move on for a little bit. Let's keep telling the stories until people do feel tired and overwhelmed by them. And maybe it will sink into the good men and the good people to say, okay, maybe I wasn't thinking. And it's not that you don't get to say what you want, is you don't get to say certain things anymore. Because it's a, like, if you think of it like a tax on people's jobs, that women have to carry a tax, that people of color have to carry a tax, that they have to, like, pay more and make more effort to do a basic job. Well, maybe that's why it's harder to do their jobs. And if you think about it, I think that's the most important part of the whole thing. And it's not a left-wing or right-wing thing, is that you shouldn't have to go over and above to do your job, really. To do a job. And then you can be judged fairly on your on the quality of your work, but it certainly right. is impacted by this stuff.
Right.
100%. It's, I think there's going to be a lot of stories, and I don't care if they're, some of them are minor, like microaggressions, and some of them are major, like very serious. They're all in the same, they're all, some obviously are more difficult.
Right, some are criminal, and some are not.
But
however,
all of them.
Even a toxic workplace culture is not a good thing. And, mm-hmm. you know, for a lot of women, too, the more, I was saying this on the Vergecast a few weeks ago, none of this is fun for anybody.
Mm-mm.
For women who are sitting back and opting not to tell their stories right now, or just for whatever reason, they've moved beyond it, and, you know, they've come to their own sort of resolution. To watch these stories coming out can be really harmful to them and difficult for them,
right.
Even if they're not actively participating in the conversation. And there are a lot of silent voices out there,
absolutely.
Too.
Absolutely. And again, even if it's minor, don't feel bad about saying something about it. I mean, if I literally get asked to smile more on television, I'm going to kill someone. I'm not going to smile more. Everybody? I'll smile when I fucking feel like it, all right? How about that? How about we do that?
And 2018, Kara Swisher is not smiling.
I'm not going to smile for you. No, I may, but if it pleases me, I'll smile. Maybe I will smile more, but maybe I won't. But if I get one more tweet at me saying smile more, now I'm going to get a ton of tweets about it, but I'm not smiling more. It's not going to happen.
I can tell you right now she's not smiling.
I'm not smiling at all.
Number one. I don't know.
Get to it.
I'm shocked.
Yeah.
Simply shocked by this.
Yeah.
Not surprisingly, the number one tech story of 2017 was the Uber saga.
Yeah.
In fact,
so indicative.
Someone tweeted
so
at us.
So indicative.
Rita Ingebayer wrote, "How is Uber not in this thread?" Well, here you go, Rita. It's right here.
Yes.
It all started with Susan Fowler's blog post.
Yep.
That was, I think, in February of this year.
Yep.
Led to an executive shakeup. Recode, the New York Times, the Information, all kinds of news outlets ended up exposing Uber for a variety
of issues,
including Grayball, which was a code name for a software that was used to evade authorities.
We were like the Avengers. Everyone
municipalities
did
where Uber wasn't supposed to be operating. Johanna Bouillon from Recode wrote a story for BuzzFeed a while ago, actually. This is long before 2017.
Nobody was paying attention.
Where she discovered that Uber had been tracking her ride as she went to go meet with an Uber executive. And so
They were casual about it. So what?
So Uber's had a whole host of problems. We can't possibly encapsulate it at the end of this podcast. But if you've been following us at all, you know this is the big topic.
Yeah.
I guess my question is for you, Kara, in 2018, do you think that Uber's going to bounce back?
You know, they've got some issues. Dara's been a little slow about hiring. He's a new CEO. I think, look, Uber's still a great product. You know, whatever. There's lots of issues around regulation, around the safety, around all kinds of stuff. But we all think it's a useful product. It's a very, I use it all the time. I use Lyft all the time. I don't want to drive a car anymore. You know, it solves a really good problem. And there's issues. There's a story today about whether it creates more congestions in cities and should people pay a tax on it. These are all things we'll work out. But it's obviously a product people like to use. So let's get to the heart of it. And by the way, it's a very good app. Uber's a very good app. They innovate all the time. I'm always like, oh, that's interesting. Like every time they do something, I've always found it to be it works really well. There's issues around drivers that absolutely need to be addressed. It should, if they could get all the real problems aside. The problems they shouldn't have had to deal with is this rampant sexism at this company, which to me is the quintessence of Silicon Valley's problems. This bro culture that really didn't think, this aggression that is just ridiculous and pointless. This need to constantly expand and not get the things right while you're doing them. I get that. I get the idea of, but it's not like Jeff Bezos' expansion. It's weird and aggressive expansion. Like, let's do this. Let's try this. Let's not put these things into place. And then say, oh, well, we'll clean it up later. Like, they can't do that, obviously. They have to think about how they're making money, clearly. I think that Dara, as I said before, he like opens up a drawer and finds another dead body. And they're like, oh, whoa, this. And, you know, I'm going to do something here that I don't do. I'm going to compliment Travis Kalanick. He is a really interesting entrepreneur. I ran into him the other day. He by accident showed up at the Vox Media party, Christmas party. Yeah.
He showed up at the Vox Media?
Yeah, he thought it was another party. And he ran into me. I was like, hi, happy holidays. Oh, Merry Christmas. I can say that now. I was teasing. You could always say Merry Christmas. Yeah, he did. I hadn't seen him in a while. And it was entirely awkward because we'd done some tough reporting. And it only would have been helped if Mike Isaac was standing next to me and Jessica Lesson was on the other side. But look, he's a great entrepreneur. His aggression, if it was channeled properly and not so toxic, could have been a really interesting character. You know what I mean? Like, you sort of, like, it's clearly a lot of it is born of his creativity, 100%. But this stuff along the way is just unacceptable, and it's why he lost his job. The treatment of women, the way they created these ridiculous, sneaky, like, as if they were the Mossad or something and doing, like, crazy, sneaky spy stuff was just illegal. Some of the stuff around what they did with Google, that'll be borne out this year, the Waymo lawsuit. Mm-hmm. It's just, like, it's the same pattern of misbehavior that's just, it just gets in the way of what is good. So we'll see. We'll see if they can put some people in a place there and make it into a product that they can be proud of. We'll see. I think it's hard. I think it's, it should work because it's a great product, right? That's the thing. Both Lyft and that.
He unfortunately helped to breed a pretty toxic, bro-like, frat-like party culture. Yep. I mean, that was obvious in some of the memos.
That memo I got?
Exposed,
yeah.
You know, since then.
They were proud of that memo. Don't vomit off the roof. What?
Right. That was the Miami event. And then there were stories about the event in Vegas that they had. And, you know, it's funny because I used to think, well, you're a grown-up company now. You can't do this anymore. But the truth is that no matter how big or small your company is, you cannot, you know, create, establish, facilitate, encourage a terrible party frat-like culture.
It's ridiculous.
And have everyone and expect that nothing's going to go wrong and that everyone's going to work comfortably. Like,
right.
it just can't.
Look, I enjoyed the movie Office Christmas Party, too. Like I enjoyed that. I like Jennifer Aniston finally loosening up. I get that. But the fact of the matter is, it creates an atmosphere at work where you can't do your work. And it doesn't mean you can't have fun. You can't occasionally make a stupid joke. You can't occasionally, like, have, have fun at work. There, right. There's certainly, but you don't need to, like, literally, there's no need for strippers. There's just no need for strippers. I'm not sure how, like, and the fact that you get argument about that is sort of like, there's no need. I'm pretty certain there's no need for escorts. I'm going to go out on a limb here. If you want to do that on your own, by the way, listen, I live in San Francisco. It's a sex pot. If you want to date a goat, date a goat. Like, go for it. But date a goat on your own time.
But don't bring the goat strippers.
Don't bring the goat strippers to holiday parties. And, like, why do that? Like, why? Like, again, it's like you don't want to be seen as the sex police of these people or the police of behavior. But there are some sensible ways to create. And, by the way, you get a better workplace for it. You just do if you're letting people do their very best. And it doesn't mean you can't make mistakes. It doesn't mean you don't do stupid things, because every company does stupid. Listen, Ricoh's been full of stupid things, like a lot of them. But it's always in the sense of when someone objects, we think about it, we talk about it, we do stuff. And so I think there's no reason Uber can't come back. And by the way, Dara is a terrific CEO. He's going to be coming to Code, I think, and we're going to talk about that. But and Travis, if he cleaned himself up, I guess, you know, I mean, I don't agree with Ariana about redemption on everybody, but certainly understanding the impact of that is problem. We'll see.
So did you convince Travis to come on your podcast?
No, I didn't talk to him. It was so awkward.
At the restaurant?
It was so awkward. And someone who's there was like, oh, look, it's your bane of your existence, Kara Swisher. And of course, he looked like he was going to vomit onto his shoes. But, you know, but he didn't. He was very polite. It was odd. It was an odd and awkward encounter. But I'll call him. What the heck?
Travis.
I was at dinner at Sue Decker's house the other night, and it was lovely. So, and I used to call her incompetent at one point. We'll be having dinner in 2020. Something like that. But yes, they can. What do you think? What do you think, Lauren Good?
You think that Uber can redeem themselves?
Yeah.
As a product, yes. I think you're absolutely right in that they have a very, very good product. I personally have been using Lyft a lot in the past year, and I think Lyft is great. I was surprised by how easy it was just to switch over to Lyft after using Uber since I covered Uber in the very early days of it. For the Wall Street Journal, like, I wrote this, like, article about, like, hailing a black car with your app. Mm-hmm. And it was like this novelty at the time, right? And so now it's, but I do think they have an excellent product. I think from a product perspective, there are going to be a lot of people out there. I think they have to improve the relations within their treatment of drivers.
Yep.
The one thing I hear consistently, and this is very anecdotal, when I get into any type of ride-sharing service now, is that I ask people, do you drive for both? Do you drive for all of them? Do you drive for Juno? Do you drive for, you know, Uber and Lyft and everything? And a lot of people say, I have a really hard time getting in touch with Uber representatives. I don't feel that they are paying as fairly. I think that's an economics problem. It's a logistics problem that Uber could easily figure out with the right amount of data.
And no one's going to be totally happy.
And they, but I think they need to improve that. And I think, obviously, I think the greatest challenge for them is just the corporate structure and the workplace environment.
Yeah.
That's the, you know, we need to figure out if...
You definitely get a sense of not everyone feels thrilled to be working for them when you talk to drivers. There's a lot of griping.
Yeah, there's a lot of griping. And I think that, you know, Uber's like doing some of the right things they're supposed to be doing. They replaced the CEO. They have a new CEO. They brought in Francis Fry, who's coming in with an academic approach on how to make it a better workplace culture. They've done this investigation. They've done like all these steps, but they still, 2017 was a really, it was a revelation of a lot of terrible things.
I think there'll be more.
The story about the medical records in India. Like, I mean, that's a really, really terrible thing.
It just was amazing. It's amazing that I got pushed back. Well, what's wrong with it? I'm like, who raised, you know what I mean? Like, what part of you doesn't, like, understand? This was different executives that were doing this. And so it was sort of, but I think people did recognize it was a problem. You know what I mean? Like,
I think from a product perspective, they're going to be fine.
We'll see how it goes.
It's all about their... Yeah, and like and I said, this is the year. It's going to be very difficult to disassociate the product you're using from the company that's coming from. And that's already shown in 2017. And
also, it does matter the person at the top. I think people forget that these companies are run by individuals. And that's, you know, the people at Lyft, I was sitting next to Logan Green the other day, and he's the nicest man. Literally, and he's with his high school sweetheart. It was like such a different experience talking to him. And it's such as that. It's that, like, do not forget these are human beings. Jeff Bezos, Tim Cook, Sheryl Sandberg, Mark Zuckerberg, Travis Kalanick, Logan Green. They're all people, and they have to, you don't think of them as stars or celebrities or anything else, and they have responsibilities given their power. And we have to hold them to account for that. for that power and how they behave. And we're not trying to be judge and jury as the press. We're trying to say, why don't you think about this a little bit? And I think it's worked out really well with Uber because I think the press has done a great job. And at the same time, we have to understand they're human beings and they're going to make mistakes. That was me being nice for 14 seconds.
I think that's a good wrap-up to 2017.
Yes, absolutely. Thank God. Goodbye. I can't wait for 2017 to be over. What about you?
I'd like to do one of those tests where it's like, how much have you aged in the past 12 months? And just do like a BuzzFeed list where I check off a bunch of boxes. It's like, you've aged 39 years.
No,
Thank
I think you look good.
I've had like a personally healthy year.
Yeah, me too.
2016 was tough because I had like a knee surgery and I was...
Tiny violins.
It was like just tough for me, like physically, but 2017, I think.
2018.
2017, the self-care thing, you have to, it sounds corny, but you have to kind of do it.
We'll be talking about what's coming.
You have to take breaks from social media.
Yes. Anyway, take breaks for sure. And I'm saying that, and you know how I love the Twitter. This has been another great episode of Too Embarrassed to Ask. I'd like to thank my co-host, Lauren Good, for making 2017 more bearable. I know I make jokes at your expense, and I'm going to continue doing so.
That's okay.
In 2018, because you're just so easy to tease.
I kind of like it.
And again, thanks to KQED in San Francisco for letting us record in their studio today.
Yes, thank you to KQED. And if you all enjoyed this week's episode as much as we did, be sure to subscribe to the show and leave us a review at itunes.com/tooembarrassedtoask. Really, leave us a review. This is one of the few episodes that Kara and I did where we're just kind of chatting with each other. And if you like it, let us know. If you'd rather have guests, let us know.
Yeah. When you subscribe, you'll be the first to listen to new episodes every Friday or catch up on previous episodes where we answer all of the tech questions that our listeners have been too embarrassed to ask.
If you're not on Apple Podcasts, you can also subscribe on Spotify, Google Play Music. Basically, wherever you listen to podcasts, we're there. You can also listen to every episode at recode.net/podcasts.
And while you're there, you should check out our other shows, Recode Decode, Recode Replay, and Recode Media with Peter Kafka, and also Lauren's show. Lauren, I want you to do an ad for yourself. You have a video show.
I do. I have a video series called Next Level. We just completed our second season in December. It was great. We look at, I always think of it as a big team effort because it's such a big crew.
Why don't you be like a douche bro right now?
I do it all. I shoot it. I edit it. And really it's a team effort, but we look at all of the cutting edge innovations, things that are coming out of labs and research institutions that haven't hit the market yet, but could change things in the tech world if they do, if and when they launch. And it's pretty nerdy, but we really try to distill it down for like a normal tech person audience, and it's really fun. So if you get a chance, go to our YouTube page, Verge's YouTube page, and check out Next Level Season 2.
Yeah.
The Verge also has a great podcast called The Vergecast, hosted by Nilay Patel. Ashley Carmen and Caitlin Tiffany host a new podcast called Why'd You Push That Button?
Very popular.
And it's very fun. And keep an eye out for even more Verge podcasts coming soon. That's all I can say for now.
Casey Newton is doing Converge. He's been on Recode Decode for a month. I've been training him.
Oh, and he's talked about it.
I'm like Luke Skywalker, and he's like Rey. You know what I mean?
So this is out there.
Yes,
in the open
absolutely.
Now.
Okay. Converge.
I thought you were
coming.
Just scooping
him. No, I'm not scooping him. He's been talking about it. I've been giving him tips, showing him how to do things. We've done four fantastic Recode Decodes. Casey Newton's going to come out with Converge. And he has been a very good Jedi trainee so far. Yeah. But I remain Luke Skywalker. Anyway, don't forget to tweet your questions ahead of time to @Recode with the hashtag TooEmbarrassed or email them to TooEmbarrassed@Recode.net.
Thanks for listening. Thank you to our sponsors and to Cadence 13 and Vox Media, which sells all of those ads. You can listen to the show for free. Thanks to our editor, Joel Robbie, and our producer, Eric Johnson. We'll be back next week to answer more of the questions you've been too embarrassed to ask. So tune in then.
Tune in then.